Rabbi Dr. Shalom Springer.
Good morning to you all. Our subject in this shiur is a surprising one. I'll just entitle it Moshiach. The subject is Moshiach, and believe it or not, a reference to it, a little bit obliquely perhaps, occurs in Parshas Vayera. And this year straddles in a way Lech Lecha and Vayera. And we are dealing with the salvation of Lot from Sodom. And this, of course, follows last week's said about the four kings and the five kings and the wars between the two. And then Avraham Avinu, who walks into battle almost on his own with a few men and is victorious because he has been told that his nephew Lot has been swept up in the war and therefore he takes the initiative that he wants to save his nephew. In fact, the Mephoshim say, interestingly enough, that he feels a sort of guilt feeling. He feels responsible, because one of the things that we remember from the stories, not in the Torah but in the Midrashim, and everybody knows this because we learned this as children, that Avraham Avinu was thrown into a Kivshan Oesh by Nimrod. And there was a Vikuach there. Nimrod challenged Avraham. And Avraham met the challenge and was prepared to be thrown into a Kivshan Oesh. As far as Avraham was concerned, this was the end. He had no expectation at all that there was going to be a miracle and that he was going to emerge completely unscathed. Well, he had a brother called Horon. And Horon, as we say in English, sat on the fence. He wasn't quite sure which way to go. After all, Nimrod was very powerful, very persuasive in maybe a forcible way. And he decided to wait and see. And he decided that if Avraham comes out and he survives the Kivshan Oesh, then he'll allow himself to be thrown in as well, or he'll declare his belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if Avraham doesn't survive, then he'll side with Nimrod. Anyway, you know the story. In fact, Avraham survived, and then they threw Horon in, but he didn't survive, because he already went in with an expectation of surviving, having seen Avraham. Therefore, his emunah was nowhere near the same. But the fact is that Avraham felt that it was his influence, in a way, that had caused Horon's death, and therefore he felt a sort of obligation to his brother that he should save his son, his own nephew. So that's partly the story, the background, as we know, details of saving Lot and the struggle with the inhabitants of Sodom. And we know that Lot was actually saved b'schus Avraham. Now, question is, why does the Torah spend so much column inches, so many column inches, on telling us the details of Lot and the way he was saved? I mean, he's not a very important person in the sense that, you know, he is a great leader or teacher. So why does the Torah spend so much information, give us so much information about that? And we know that he was accommodated in the end because he didn't want to live in Tzoyah. So there's a lot of detail here. And I just want to read you a posuk in Vayera. So it's in the middle of the story where Lot is being rescued from Sodom. And as the morning was breaking, so the Malachim pushed, Duchika, the Targum says, was pressing Lot, saying, Kum, kachas ishtecha, veshnei benoisecha, hanim tzois, who are found. Now, it's this word that the Mephoshim alight on, this word, hanim tzois, that are found. I mean, he didn't know where his daughters were. So the Malach uses this word. And then the pasuk ends off, pentisofa b'avoin ho'ir, perhaps you get swept up in the avoin ho'ir. Now, the Medrash on that particular pasuk says the following. Starting off with the words, kum kachas ishtecha v'shnei b'secha hanim tzois, that are found. And that's in the plural. So the Medrash says, shtei metzios, two items, two elements are found here, Rus Hamoyovia Venamo Haamoidis. There's Rus, the Moabite lady, as we know about, from Megillas Rus. And there's also another one, Namo Harmonis, Omer Reb Yitzchok, Motsosi, David Avdi. I have found David buried in here, so to speak, secreted in here in this posuk, with the word Nimtzois. We are making a find here. We are discovering something. That's why the Medrash picks up on this word. Veheichon Motsosi, where have I found it? Bestoim. I found it in Stoim, and it's a reference to Moshiach. So we start off with this Medrash that somehow or other Chazal relate the story of Sodom and the Metzios and what was found there, and the reason why such detail is expended by the Torah on the story of Lot with Moshiach. In other words, it wasn't for Lot that the Torah is giving us all this information. It's for other reasons and for future causes and for future effects that that's why the Torah wants to tell us about it. And in order to introduce us to the subject, in fact, who actually is the teacher of this subject today, is the Maharal in Netzach Yisroel. And he writes as follows. Hatam shehamelech HaMashiach yeh noilet ma'uma acheres. That the reason why the Melech Mashiach, which eventually will emerge from the descendants of David, Shari David Mimaya Ovis Ushloima Meamoinis. Shloima, as we know very well, came from Amoyovis. His grandmother was Rus Amoyovis. And Shloima Meamoinis is a bit more obscure of how Shloima relates via Bathsheba, his mother, and into the Amoinis. The actual genealogy is not completely clear. There is a little bit of information that we have, and she was the granddaughter of one of the famous characters in Tanakh, and therefore there is some understanding about why Amoinis is here. But the point is that what the Medrash is telling us, that Amoin and Moav come together here, and they come together in David. So the Maral goes on to explain. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring in a new creation, a new existence, he has got to make it a mixture of some other natiya, some other plant, some other branch completely. Something completely different from what we started off with. In other words, talking about, in plant language, splicing two plants together. One plant from a different min from the other, and then you get something new coming out. Because if you use the old plant and somehow variations of it, you haven't got anything new. You've got to bring in something totally new in order to get a chiddush, to get something chodosh. Ulefikoch, kasha Hashem Yisborach rotzo lehavi zera Mashiach le'olam. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bring in the ancestor of Mashiach into the world, hoyotzorich lasois harkova netia chadosho. He had to make it from a Netiyah Chadosh, he had to bring something foreign into Klal Yisrael, something completely different, something which was totally non-Klal Yisrael, as we shall see, in order to create this Chiddush, which is called Moshiach. And so it's an admixture, if you like, a new compound, a new idea that the Maharal has just explained to us, in order to have Moshiach, and why that is, we shall see a little bit further on in the Shir. So this could be sort of produced by the sort of chemistry that he's describing. Two diametric opposites make something which is totally new. And we cannot find any nation among all the nations in the world more remote from Klal Yisrael than Amoin and Moav. They're the ones most distant from Klal Yisrael. In other words, we talked about a diametric opposite. We want a diametric opposite to Klal Yisrael and add that into Klal Yisrael. And somehow or other produces this Chiddush. And how do we know of that about Amon and Moav? Because the Torah says, Lo yovoi amoini umoyovi bekal Hashem, that we are not allowed to allow Moavite or an Amoini into Kalashem. In other words, they can become Jewish, but they can't marry into the Jewish nation. They're not allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael. And we must remember that no other nation, even Mitzrayim, who persecuted us, no other nation has this particular bar on entering Klal Yisrael. Mitzrayim has to wait a little bit, but eventually they can get it. Amon Moav Ad Oilom. They're never allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael at all. So even Mitzrayim. So therefore, the Torah is telling us that there's something about Amon Moav which is totally anti-Jewish, completely the opposite to what we stand for. And therefore, the combination of two opposites produces this Mashiach, which the Maharal calls Chidush. Yeah, something very, very new. So apparently, the whole chain of the Melech HaMashiach and the production and the story that we're talking about Lloyd in Stein, for example, is full of strangeness. The producing of Mashiach through the ages has got some. I'll just mention a few of those. And you'll see that they are very, very odd in nature. So there's Lloyd and his daughters. So, for example, the production of Amon Moav in the first place, the Torah describes in a parasha about how they thought the world had come to the end, and therefore they cohabited Lloyd and his daughters, and that produced Amon Moav. That's a very strange origin of producing the Melech HaMashiach. And then we've got Rus and Boaz, the whole story that's involved in that, and the fact that this union also is a very odd and out of the ordinary sort of union, so there's another strangeness about it. And then Yehuda and Toma also in that, and the whole story that surrounds Yehuda and Toma, as we'll get in our Psukim. So in all, the Hishtashlis, the chain of events leading up to the Melech HaMashiach is covered with, is included in it, is a lot of very, very strange happenings. And from that, we get the Yesh Me'ayin, something from Ayin, from nothing, from a very odd source. So it actually all begins very much earlier. So our story of opposites begins much earlier, in fact, last week, Sedra, and that is Lot versus Avraham Avinu. And they are Shnei Hafochim. They are complete opposites in nature and character. And in fact, we are told that Heyei Barocha, the Torah tells us and describes Avraham Avinu as the source of Barocha. Heyei Barocha, you shall be. And that's together with an idea of light. And light, on the other hand, light is associated with darkness. And the Mephoshim bring the fact that His name connotes Klala, and with the words Umakalalelcha O'oya, which Rav Shlom says to Avraham Avinu, those who curse you will be cursed. And the Targum translates it Umalatatacha Eilut. So the word light is in that word that is associated with darkness and with Klala. So we have two very, very opposite human beings, and they have very opposite effects. And of course, the world is a parable. This is a moshel for the spiritual world, for Olam Ruchni. And as we know, light creates or facilitates existence. When you shine a light, as even an English expression, shining a light onto something, it gives you the clarity of what is there. On the other hand, in the darkness, then that creates something that is invisible. It might be there, but you can't see it. And we know that the Torah says, and Mephoshim tell us in Kapitel Beis, that when Kadosh Baruch Hu was creating Shemayim Ba'aretz, it uses the word Behib Bara'on, when he created them. And Chazal say, if you turn the letters round, Behib Bara'on, it's Be'Avraham. In other words, the whole reason for the creation of the world, of the universe, is so that there should be an Avraham in the world, and that means all those things that come with Avraham, which is light and bracha, etc., which is very, very important. Sun shines on the world, and Avraham Avinu is the sibba. Avraham Avinu is the cause why the sun shines on the world, because we Boraham, but Avraham, the Rebbeinu Shlom made the world in order there should be an Avraham, and why that is, we all know, but we shall repeat it nevertheless about the chesed of Avraham. But interestingly enough, there are other characters like that are associated with darkness. Lavan, for example, Bilam is another example. And Rav Simcha Zissel makes a very good sort of moshel of the difference between the two types of people. The Avraham type of person and the Bilam type of person, or in fact, here, Lot. And he gives a moshel of the difference between a bat and an eagle. The bat and the eagle, both flying creatures, but they're very, very different in nature. The bat looks forward to the night. He can't see during the day. In fact, they don't fly during the day at all. They fly at night. They look forward to the darkness. And when it's dark, that's when they can operate. So the bat operates in balot, in sort of secret, in the dark. On the other hand, the eagle is the exact opposite. He looks forward to the daylight. You know, he's waiting the whole night and he wants the first crack of light, because then he can soar into the heavens and everything becomes light and bright and he can see. He has complete clear vision of what's going on down there. And so therefore this is the difference between tzaddikim and rishoyim. Tzaddikim look forward to light. Everything should be transparent. Everything should be visible. Everything, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's radiance should be felt. On the other hand, rishoyim want to hide everything, and it's called what's called heder. It's called the absence of light, the complete absence of existence. So Avraham Avinu, being the Mekoya Brocha, he wants the light, and he is Brocha, and a deep divide between him and Loit, and the progenitor of Ammon and Moav. Incidentally, Moav is Gematria 49, which is an interesting Gematria. That is the same Moav and Memtes Shari Tuma, for example. Although you could argue Memtes Shari Kedusha as well, but for Loit it's associated with Tuma. So, in other words, Bilam hired Moav eventually to curse Klal Yisrael, and that's why Lo Yovoi Amoini Umoyovi Bekahal Hashem. But there is, of course, another reason as well. Another divide between Avraham and Loit. And we know that Avraham is the personification of Chesed, whereas Loit becomes the personification of Achzorius. Avraham Avinu was Zoicha to everything. And Beschus of Chesed, the world was created. Al ma ha'olam oimed ala Chesed. And the Ramchal explains how it works together with the creation of the world and Behiboron. The Ramchal explains that, in fact, Chesed supports the origin of everything. And the reason he gives is this, that because the Rabbeinu Shalom wanted to create a world, and that was an act of Chesed, and he wanted there to be Chesed in the world, and that, of course, is produced by Avraham Avinu, so it's the reason of creation itself. And so when someone practices Chesed in this world, he is becoming, I'll use my own word, a shutuf in the creation of the world, because that's the cause of the creation of the world. So when a person practices the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way of producing chesed, therefore we understand why Avraham is the reason why the world was created. Ammon Amoav, on the other hand, lo yovoi amoni asher lo kidmo eschem balechem u'mamayim, because they practiced an epitome of cruelty. Yidden were thirsty in the desert, and all they had to do was to bring some lechem and mayim, and they owed it to Klal Yisrael because of the debt that their ancestor owed to Avraham Avinu, and they completely ignore that. Kofui Toivo is one of the worst middas, and that's one of the reasons given of why the Torah bars Ammon and Moav from coming into Klal Yisrael. Firstly, they hired somebody to curse Klal Yisrael, the antithesis of Avraham Avinu. And then the Chesed is also an antithesis to Avraham Avinu, that they practice cruelty, and therefore they should not have any shaychus with Klal Yisrael. And that's why the Maharal says they were chosen, incredibly enough, to be the admixture to produce the Chiddush of Mashiach. Why that's so, we will still see. So the Torah also says that when Loit was moving, you know, in last week's Seder about you go right, I'll go left, etc., we know, and this etc. as well, we have that split up between Avraham and Loit, but it says, Vayisa Loit Mikedem. Loit travelled from the east, and Rashi says, Mikadmoinoi Shaloilo. This wasn't just something we are being told he travelled this way or that way, this direction, that direction. Chazal Darshanit Mikadmoinoi Shaloilo, Kedem is a loshen of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was traveling away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you listen to the Shirim of Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, in his inimitable style about this particular subject, he says that Lloyd's move wasn't so much geographical as theological. Okay, it wasn't just he was moving one place to another. The Torah is telling us something about his emunah or lack of emunah and his waning emunah. So there is an eternal divide between Avraham Avinu and Lloyd. Stoim produces a school of cruelty, and we all know the story of Lloyd and his daughter. I won't go into graphic and morbid detail about it, but she took Rachmonis on somebody, on a beggar that came to Stoim, and they tried to keep all those people out. They didn't want them to enjoy, as the Ramban tells us, they didn't want the people to enjoy the wonderful pastures of Stoim. It was the most fertile place, the most wonderful place to live, apparently, before it was destroyed. And the Ramban sort of tells us a great deal about what Stoim was like before it was destroyed. And they just wanted to keep people out, don't want the people here. Anyway, they had a policy, an official policy, that any traveller was not allowed to be given food. He'd be given everything else, but not food. And eventually they starved, and then they took their money back, which they'd been giving. In the first place, they gave him money, and he couldn't eat money, so he eventually starved. But the daughter of Lloyd had Rachmonis on one of these travellers, and she secretly hid some food in her cud. And anyway, she was found out, and she was killed, executed, in the most horrendous way. The Medrash describes how she was executed. That's the cruelty they meted out, and they wanted to make sure that everyone understands that from now on that nobody should give anything to a traveller at all. And so we know that Sodom was a place where they practiced cruelty, and the official constitution was cruelty. Complete rejection for everything that Avraham Avinu stood for and stood up for. So we have this idea, and joining these two opposites together somehow creates Mashiach. So the Maharal asks, well, why is that? I mean, it seems very strange that we should put those two opposites together and actually include Ammon and Moav in Klal Yisrael in some way, and therefore Mashiach is born. And the Maharal explains the following. What is the job of Mashiach? What's he going to do when he actually arrives? The meaning of Mashiach, the way he translates it, is revolution. Mashiach's got to create a revolution. He's got to turn the world on its head. And it's a revolution of truth. Now, we live in a world, and we know we can experience it ourselves and testify to it. We live in an Olam HaShekhar as probably no other generation has lived in the Olam HaShekhar as we do. Yeah, with all the social media, etc., and all the other reasons and other media telling lies about Israel and the Jews, etc., we are living through a time where the whole world is telling stories about the Jewish people, and most of it, the majority of it, is pure lies. We had the old blood libels in the past, and there were singular events. Now there seems to be a whole world movement against the Jewish people. So we can relate to that completely. So Mashiach, when he comes, is going to have to create a revolution. He's going to have to turn the world on his head. And it's going to be at a time, says the Maharal, when Klal Yisrael will be at their lowest ebb. We are going to be downtrodden. We are going to be ridiculed. And I think, in fact, we are actually experiencing that already. I mean, now, certainly, times are very, very hard. And the Maharal says, She'enyonoi shel Moshiach hu l'choylel me'apecha shel emes. To create a me'apecha, a complete revolution, an overturning shel emes, revolution of truth. Me'apecha mitzah mikotze el kotze, a revolution that brings the world from one extreme to the other. Can we imagine for a few moments that when you come out of this room later on and you hear the news that the whole world has done tshuva, the whole world is saying sorry to the Eden, the whole world, we can't imagine that. That's impossible. That would require such an upheaval, such a turning round of world events, that at the moment, as we stand, it's completely unimaginable. So therefore, you can imagine that the job description of Moshiach is going to be a very, very difficult one indeed. What he's going to have to do is change the world from the way it is in a completely different idea. Completely different. So Koidim Shigala Mashiach Yia B'nei Yisrael B'shofel HaMadrega. Before Mashiach comes, Klal Yisrael will be in a degraded state, and we'll have very difficult times. B'chinas Ekev Amokim Nomuch B'yosa, in a very, very low place. Koidim V'somuch L'bias HaMagoyel. Before the Goyel comes, before Mashiach comes, Nira Shiflus Yisrael Yosef M'Moshe Yikavah. It'll be at the lowest point that we have ever, ever been. So I don't know whether this is the point that we're reaching now with the whole world against us. I just make the remark that the Megillas Esther starts with the word Vayihi. Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh. And Rashi tells us in various places that the word Vayihi always signifies Peronus on the horizon. And usually that Peronus is in the same Posuk. So the question is, Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh ha-moelech mehoidivat kuch, al-kush, sheva esmeya medina, he had 127 medinas. That's all the Posuk says. Where is the Peronus there? And what Chazal say, and we could relate to that through our history, that whenever Eden had been in trouble, there was always some place to run. Okay, even during Nazi Germany, there was some place to go to America and England, there was a place to run throughout our troubles. But at the time of the Purim story, because Achashverosh ruled over 127 Medinos, and that was the known world at the time, then as soon as the Gezerah appeared, there was nowhere to run, because every place that they ran was also the dominion of Achashverosh. And I think we are in that situation today. There is nowhere to run. There's nowhere you can go other than Eretz Yisrael and feel, and even there, Klal Yisrael is not safe by any means at the moment. There's no place in the world we can go where we would be welcomed and respected, nowhere at all. At the moment, the world is in a state where everybody is against us, and it could be that it's emulating what the Maharal is saying. This is what will happen at the time before Mashiach. It's one of the simonim. Klal Yisrael will be at the lowest ebb, and it'll be very difficult. So when Mashiach comes, he's going to have to create a mahapecha, a revolution, and turn the world from one way, from one extreme to the other. And indeed, Lot himself, in a sense, paved the way and recanted from the fact that he'd moved into Stoim. And he did do Mesiras Nefesh for the travelers, we know that. He cut his ties with Sodom. And then it says that as the Malachim were taking him out, they held hands very strongly. Although the Pasuk says the Malach held the hands of Lot and his daughters, etc. But apparently Chazal tell us that Lot also gripped the Malach's hand as well, as if to say, I'm coming with you and I'm cutting my ties with Sodom. So Lot as well seemed to move in the direction that he should. We know that the Pasuk immediately after the one I read before has got the word Vayismamor. Vayismamor has one of the rare, I think it's four shalsheleses, especially in the Gina, where the Balkoira has to sort of sing a repeated note three times. So there is a delay, and that's what the word means, delay. Because even though Lot wanted to come out of Sodom, and he realized that the writing was on the wall, very, very difficult to leave. You know, we know about the Eden in Nazi Germany. They couldn't leave. They found it very, very difficult to leave a country you'd been living in and have been comfortable in by Yismamo. So even then, even though Lot had come round to behaving in the correct way, nevertheless, it was not easy to do so. Another character, as we know, David Miller's grandmother, Rus, was also revolutionary. What she went through, because her origins were in Moab, and we know that was the most degraded place. She was inculcated with the structure and the culture of Moab completely, and she revolted against it, and therefore became what she was, and therefore a very fitting grandmother of the Melech HaMashiach to be. So in other words, the Mashiach has to be an agent of change. Melech Poiretz Geder. That's the lashon of the Gemara, that a Melech Poiretz Geder. There are various Mishnahs, and the Rambam Pasuk in Hilchos Melachim, that a Melech has certain rights. He can, you know, drive a road through your garden if he wants to. Melech Poiretz Geder. Melech can pull down fences and do what he likes. That's the Melech HaMashiach as well. He's got to be Poiretz Geder. He's got to pull down fences and all sorts of norms that will be around at the time that he comes. And therefore, Dovid HaMelech was the precursor of a revolution, because David HaMelech showed us how we can do tshuva. David HaMelech was choite, but he did tshuva. That's a revolution. And therefore our parsha provides a start for the story or the emergence and creation of Mashiach, because we got it in the pasuk Hanimtzoi. We come back to the pasuk where we started. Rus overturned the Tumah via Kedusha. She assumed Kedusha. David HaMelech overturned Chet via Tshuva. So we're talking about a lot of people involved in the construction and the formation of Mashiach. All of those are revolutionaries of one sort or another. And so, therefore, if we wanted enough, well, then we can, in fact, have it as the Novi Tzefania says, I'll just quote one pasuk and end with that, that he says that Ki oz ahapoich el amim sofo beruro likroi kulom b'shem Hashem la'ovdoi shchem echot. That there will become a time when the Rabbeinu Shalom will create a mahapecha, a complete overturning of what the nations stand for, and that they will see the emes, and b'yoymahu yeh Hashem echad u'shmoy echad v'bias ha-mashiach b'mheira b'yomeinu. Here.